And the question is, how is that going to affect the court as an institution? Will it affect the way the justices interact with each other and with their clerks? And it typically is a pretty close court. And I think one easy way to see that is, and the last argument this term, the chief gave a tribute to Justice Breyer, knowing that this would be the last time they'd be meeting, you know, at least somewhat in public, the court's still closed. And the chief clearly was emotional. I mean, his voice broke several times. So these justices do care about each other, but there have been some public statements after the leak where it kind of makes you wonder, is that dynamic changing? I hope it doesn't, but we'll see. It's also been quite a shift just in terms of the substance. This is the first full term with the full 6-3 shift. I'll talk in a second why I think saying it's a 6-3 court isn't necessarily accurate. But we'll see how far the court actually goes. So I'm going to talk in basic three basic areas. One is just the court's return to normalcy, at least sort of normalcy, after the bout with COVID that we're all still kind of going through. The second is going to be just explaining the new dynamics on the court with the new personalities and where I think the court is going with that. And the third will be the transition in terms of substance. Because I do think we're going to see some substantive shifts in some pretty important doctrinal areas. So first, I'll talk about just the shift back to normalcy. And the court this term is back in person. The building is still closed to the public, but they are having argument in person, and they are absolutely giddy about it. I had my first argument was in the November sitting this term, and when you walked into the courtroom, the justices were beaming. And they'd already been through the October sitting, but you can tell they were happy to be back in person and off the phone. And I think not just Justice Breyer, who famously flushed his toilet during one of the telephonic arguments. So it's kind of nice to avoid that, at least. But there are some important differences in the way argument's been conducted. Now there are two-minute openings where the court doesn't cut you off. You know, years ago, it used to be the case where you could get through one sentence and the questioning would start. There's seriatim questioning at the end. The court sort of borrowed this from the telephonic arguments, where after you go through the free-for-all, the chief will go and ask each justice in turn if they have any further questions. And I think that's a period to really keep your ears open, because the justices that really care about something, that's often when they're asking questions. You have even little things, like they've increased the time allotted to the government when the government participates as an amicus. It used to be 10 minutes, now it's 15, and they're expanding their argument time. You have the live audio has continued from the telephonic arguments, and I think that will stay. As I mentioned at the start, the court even granted oral argument in a case on the shadow docket, so not even a full merits case, and they heard oral argument. Granted, it was a really big case. It involved the challenge to the vaccine mandate for employers that had 100 or more employees, so it was a pretty big case, but that still was highly unusual. And one difference, too, is Justice Thomas is actively participating in the oral arguments. And not only is he participating, he typically is asking the very first question. The court sort of has adopted a de facto practice of deferring to him to ask a question first before the others jump in. But just to be clear about this, people in the past thought, oh, Justice Thomas doesn't ask questions. He doesn't pay any attention at argument. That is absolutely untrue. Anyone who's seen a Supreme Court argument when Justice Thomas wasn't actively asking questions would see he was constantly reading briefs, asking aides to bring him copies of the U.S. reports to look up a case. He was talking to Justice Breyer all the time. They're like two kids in grade school. Half the time they were laughing, so he was pretty sure they were telling jokes. But sometimes you'd see them both lean back and talk a little bit. And then Justice Breyer would lean forward and ask a question that sounded an awful lot like something Justice Thomas would want to know. And so there was kind of speculation that Justice Thomas didn't want to draw the attention of like, oh, Justice Thomas asked a question. But it was a way to kind of make sure that his views were, in fact, being presented at oral argument. Now, some of these changes I know sound fairly minor. But I think they're actually important for a kind of indirect reason, which is that the court normally acts very like instrumentally, I mean, it's just or incrementally. They don't like big changes. It's pretty drastic to see this many changes all at once, which makes you think the court might be more open to embracing change in other areas in the future. Now, I don't think there are going to be video of oral arguments anytime soon, especially with you know, kind of the increased threats to not just the justices, but other judges around the country, unfortunately. But I do think we're going to see some changes that reflect sort of modern practices, like live audio staying and being released immediately after the argument. So now I'll get into sort of the dynamics on the bench. This is a little more substantive than sort of the procedural differences at the court. So I've already mentioned to you, we have two key changes in personnel. We had, unfortunately, with Justice Ginsburg's passing, we had Justice Barrett taking her place, which, again, is just a seismic shift on the court. I mean, those are two justices that are, I think, both equally brilliant and view issues in often polar opposite ways. And soon we'll have Justice Breyer being replaced by Justice Jackson. And, you know, time will sort of tell how that will change the way the court works. I think that Justice Breyer has sort of an idiosyncratic view of the law in a way that I think Justice Jackson will likely not. But I think that will not have the same sort of fundamental shift that we've seen with Justice Barrett. And as Justice White famously did say, though, with every new member, it's a new court. And so we'll see how this affects the overall dynamic on the court once Justice Jackson takes Justice Breyer's place when he retires at the end of the term. So what kind of court do we have right now? The kind of the popular take in the press is it's a 6-3 conservative majority court. I think that's painting with too broad a brush. When you really look at the court, I think you can break it down into three groups of three. You have kind of on the spectrum on the left, you have the so-called liberal justices. You have Justice Breyer, Justice Sotomayor, and Justice Kagan.